Today is Wednesday, October the 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. A former Facebook employee says that the social media giant knows that its products hurt kids and stocks division in America.
I joined Facebook because I think Facebook has the potential to bring out the best in us. But I'm here today because I believe Facebook's products harm children, stoke division, and weaken our democracy.
And Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Paris, where he's calling on the world's most developed countries to take on the gaps between the rich and the poor.
Our unprecedented growth has frequently come with rising inequity.
And with less than 1 month to go until the 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference, world religious leaders are calling for strong action to protect the environment. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on International Edition. And for our top story, a former Facebook employee says that the social media giant knows that its products hurt kids and stoke division in America. AP Washington correspondent Saga Megani has more.
Francis Haugen says company executives are aware of apparent harm to some teens from Instagram and that algorithms governing what shows up on Facebook feeds contribute to polarization. They know how to make it all safer, but won't.
Because they have put their astronomical profits before people.
Haugen tells a Senate panel the responsibility lies with CEO Mark Zuckerberg.
The buck stops with Mark. There is no one currently holding Mark accountable but himself.
Facebook and other tech giants like Google and Amazon face minimal regulation. Haugen says lawmakers must step in to stop Facebook from hiding crucial information from the American people.
And stop the many harms it is now causing.
Sagar Megani, Washington.
And a new study says that over 300,000 children in France's Catholic Church have been victims of sex abuse over decades. AP's Angela Charlton has more.
A new French report says that an estimated 330,000 children were victims of sexual abuse within the Catholic Church over the past 70 years. This is the first time France is really facing a reckoning with this issue, and the numbers are bigger than a lot of people expected.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Paris, where he's calling on the world's most developed countries to take on the gaps between the rich and the poor. AP's Jennifer King reports.
Blinken told the 38 nations of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development that the pandemic and climate change have exacerbated inequality.
For decades, our member countries measured economic success chiefly in terms of rising GDP and stock markets, which don't reflect the reality of millions of working families. Instead, our unprecedented growth has frequently come with rising inequity.
He also called for an end to discrimination against women and LGBTQ communities, as well as a global corporate minimum tax rate that he says would prevent tax evasion and avoid a self-defeating race to the bottom. Jennifer King, Washington.
With less than 1 month to go until the 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference, world religious leaders are calling for strong action to protect the environment. The leaders gathered at a meeting hosted by the Vatican this week. Sabina Casafranco reports from Rome.
Religious leaders attending the one-day meeting Faith and Science towards COP26 Monday made a powerful appeal ahead of the UN Climate Change Conference, which opens October 31st in Glasgow, Scotland, and which Pope Francis is also planning to attend. For 2 weeks at this year's COP26 summit in Britain, participants will discuss the measures that are needed to avoid what some are calling an unprecedented ecological crisis. The appeal said, "We plead with the international community, gathered at COP26, to take speedy, responsible and shared action to safeguard, restore and heal our wounded humanity and the home entrusted to our stewardship." It was handed to Alok Sharma, president of COP26 in Glasgow, and to the Italian Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio. Sharma spoke with reporters in Rome after the meeting.
We are at a very dangerous point. The window is closing on tackling climate change and keeping that 1.5 degree critical limit, temperature limit, within reach. But the door is still open. We still have time to act.
40 faith leaders from about 20 countries attended the Vatican gathering. They included the Grand Imam of Egypt's Al-Azhar Mosque, Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayeb. Patriarch Bartholomew I of Constantinople, the spiritual leader of Orthodox Christians, and the Church of England's Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, representatives of several other religions, including Hinduism, Judaism, Sikhism, Taoism, and Zoroastrianism, were also present. Missing from those invited to the conference was the Dalai Lama, the exiled spiritual leader of Tibet's Buddhists, who China does not recognize. The decision to not invite the Dalai Lama reflects the Pope's efforts to improve relations with China. Archbishop Paul Gallagher, Secretary of the Holy See's Relations with States, told the Reuters news agency that the Vatican's relations with Beijing now are difficult, but he noted that the Dalai Lama is well respected by the Pope. Sharma said the Pope and religious representatives who took part in the Vatican meeting cover about 75% of the world's population.
That is, by any measure, a significant percentage of people across the globe, and that's why their voice matters so much.
Pope Francis has made concern for Earth, which he has described as our common home, a hallmark of his papacy. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
And we continue our reporting on the Pandora Papers. World leaders, politicians and pop stars are among thousands of individuals revealed to be concealing huge wealth through a network of anonymous companies. The revelations known as the Pandora Papers are part of a huge leak of almost 12 million files from the archives of several legal firms which shed light on the secret world of offshore finance. Henry Ridgewell has more.
Among the most startling revelations in the Pandora Papers is the hidden wealth of the president of Azerbaijan, Ilham Aliyev, and his family. The leaks show the Aliyev family and their associates traded property in Britain worth $544 million over the past 15 years. Rachel Davies-Tecker is with the anti-corruption campaign group Transparency International.
Since this family took power in 1993, they have taken control of many of the country's vital industries and its natural resources and used that to amass wealth. And this has been done at the expense of the people of that country. These are not events without harm to people. There are people who are suffering because their leaders are taking resources which should be shared out amongst those country citizens.
The leaked documents show that King Abdullah of Jordan built a secret property empire in the United States and Britain worth more than $100 million. Speaking Monday, Abdullah rejected claims he had tried to conceal his wealth. King Abdullah said, "There is nothing I have to hide from anyone, but we are stronger than this, and this is not the first time Jordan gets targeted." Pakistani cabinet ministers and their families, close allies of Prime Minister Imran Khan, are revealed to own offshore companies worth millions of dollars. Khan said they would be investigated. Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš used anonymous offshore companies to finance the purchase of a $22 million property in France. Babiš is competing in a general election this week. In a TV debate Sunday, he defended his actions. The Czech Prime Minister said the money was sent out of a Czech bank. The money was taxed. It was my money, and it returned back to the Czech Republic. It's revealed that Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and six members of his family are linked to over a dozen offshore companies, one with assets worth over $30 million. There is no evidence that the Kenyatta family stole any state assets. Much of the activity revealed by the Pandora Papers, including the use of offshore companies, is legal. There is one thread that is common to many of the revelations: London, the British capital, and the territories linked to it, such as the British Virgin Islands, offer a hidden network of legal structures designed to conceal who really owns the money, says Davies-Tecker.
You can buy UK property anonymously if you use a company that's registered and formed in an overseas territory where there is currently secrecy. We also have luxury services on offer to the global elite. And unfortunately, we have a concerning amount of professionals, accountants, lawyers, estate agents, who are happy to help corrupt and criminal actors launder and hide and manage their wealth.
Britain's ruling Conservative Party has become embroiled in the accusations after the leaks revealed party donors were linked to alleged corruption. Chancellor Rishi Sunak Monday denied that London's reputation on tax avoidance was shameful and said the government's track record on tackling global corruption was strong. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
For more reporting on the Pandora Papers, visit our website at voanews.com. And remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, on Twitter, and on YouTube, where you can catch our latest television shows. Just search for VOA Africa. Also, follow International Edition on Twitter at VOA_IE.
Voice of America!
Afghanistan's Taliban government bolstered its economic team on Tuesday this week, naming a commerce minister and two deputies as the group tries to revive a financial system in shock from the abrupt end to billions of dollars in foreign aid. A new report says that Afghanistan's capital Kabul will be plunged into darkness as the winter sets in because the Taliban haven't paid the city's electricity bills. Humanitarian organizations are also calling attention to the dire situation in the country a little over a month after the U.S. withdrawal. They warn that the country is on the verge of an economic collapse. Jan Egeland is the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council. I spoke to him a week after his return from a visit to Kabul.
I wanted to ask you about your recent tweet when you were leaving Afghanistan. You say that you are leaving with a deep sense of urgency. And in a few weeks, the mountains in the part of Afghanistan where you were will be covered in snow. You said that people you met were likely to starve and freeze unless more aid was pledged. Let me ask you this. What is the urgency, and can you quantify for us how much an optimal aid package would look like?
In Afghanistan, I met with countless families displaced by war over recent years, but also by drought and by the calamities of the last few months. These people sustain themselves by humanitarian aid or by the little they could earn in day labor here and there. Now they say there is zero work anywhere. Even public employees, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them, who were on the payroll of World Bank and other funding, have nothing since May. So these are people in a free fall. These people will not be able to feed their children very soon. These are people who are not able to sustain the harsh winter because they will not have any heating. They will not have winter clothes. Some people are in the open because they have recently been displaced. The crisis is tremendous after the events of the summer.
Mm. Now, are there any blockages, political or otherwise, that are impeding aid to Afghans?
Well, the one of the main problems now are that the financial systems are not working. You cannot transfer money to Afghanistan, and you cannot extract money that you would have in the banks there because the banking system is not there. The sanctions may really be part of that. Sanctions against the Taliban. The banks are not risking contact with Afghanistan now under Taliban. Then there is also the fact that many donors are sitting on the fence. Donors who were generous with Afghanistan for so many years are feeling that we cannot really continue aid because our enemies took over. Well, to them I say it's the same 40 million civilians who are on the ground. And the girls and the women, the boys and the men are the same. They are not now getting aid because the aid pipeline has been cut. There are also many organizations who have not been able to resume operations. I mean, it's very urgent that we get the whole the whole aid machinery going, but also that we get public salaries again to be paid.
Now, let me ask you this: is this an issue where, you know, there is lack of political will that is impeding the aid, or it is the lack of aid really in general that there's not been aid coming in?
Well, these things are very much tied. Of course, these NATO countries that rushed for the door this summer were also the ones that were funding not only the colossally expensive military political project, but also the development aid. One example is the World Bank was channeling large sums to fund 70% of the public sector in Afghanistan. Teachers, nurses, doctors, water engineers, garbage collection, municipal workers. All of that money was frozen overnight. So the last public salaries were there in May. I met teachers who were, you know, not knowing how they could feed their children since their last salary in May. So we're talking about, of course, being able to establish girls, re-establish girls' education in areas controlled by the Taliban. It is difficult, but we're making progress. But the girls need to not perish this winter for us to be able to educate them next year. The things have to be set in perspective here. We now are thinking of life-saving operations and keeping a public sector that is life-saving afloat.
That was Jan Egeland, the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council. We'll have a second part to this conversation later on this week. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Meanwhile, a new poll shows that an overwhelming majority of Americans support providing refugee status to Afghan people who helped the U.S. during its two-decade war in Afghanistan. The poll conducted by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research showed that 72% of respondents support providing refugee status to people who worked with the U.S. or Afghan government during the war. Afghan war veteran Matt Zeller, who founded the group No One Left Behind, says there will be stark consequences for Afghans who helped the U.S. unless Washington finds a way to quickly get them out.
The reality is that they're going to be dead, and therefore the American people's will is going to be completely ignored.
That was Matt Zeller, founder of the organization No One Left Behind. Let's go to Australia, where researchers have shown a bacteria can sterilize and eradicate a disease-carrying mosquito that is responsible for spreading dengue, yellow fever, and Zika. From Sydney, Phil Matter has more.
3 million male Aedes aegypti, or yellow fever mosquitoes, were released in the trial at three sites in northern Queensland state. They were reared at James Cook University in Cairns and sterilised with a naturally occurring bacteria called Wolbachia. Researchers say the bacteria appears to have changed part of the male insect's reproductive biology so that female mosquitoes that mate with them lay eggs that don't hatch. The flying insects were released over a 20-week period in 2018. Mosquito numbers subsequently fell by more than 80%. When scientists returned the following year, they found one of the trial areas had almost no mosquitoes. Nigel Beebe is an associate professor at the University of Queensland and a research scientist at the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, or CSIRO. He hopes the sterilisation method will eventually be used in developing countries.
We wanted to show in a developed country that the technology was robust. We could mass rear mosquitoes. It's not very expensive to mass rear mosquitoes. And it's really the separation of the males and the females.
The Australian team plans to use a similar technique to suppress the virus-spreading Asian tiger mosquito that's become established in the Torres Strait in northern Australia.
At the moment, we have to use relatively sophisticated technology to do that, but we are now trying to build something that is much more robust and can be used in tropical countries and will be relatively cheap to actually be able to separate the males from the females. The mass rearing of the mosquitoes is actually pretty cheap to do. So I think absolutely we'll have application in developing countries.
Researchers elsewhere are looking at ways to use sterile male mosquitoes to curb the spread of malaria. But Associate Professor Beebe has said it was a complicated challenge. More than 40% of people worldwide suffer from mosquito-borne diseases. The Australian team hopes its environmentally friendly mosquito control method will help tackle current and future outbreaks of dengue and other debilitating diseases. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In other news, President Joe Biden's National Security Advisor Jack Sullivan will hold talks with China's top diplomat Yang Jiechi in Switzerland today, upholding a pledge by both countries to boost communication amid a deepening strategic rivalry. The Zurich meeting comes at a time of heightened tensions between the world's two largest economies over a range of issues, including Taiwan. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. An international team of astronomers with the Molecules with ALMA at planet-forming scales, also called the MAPS program, have identified what they call significantly large pools of organic molecules within planet-forming disks surrounding young stars. The team refers to the molecules as precursors necessary for forming the basis of life. Rick Pantaleo joins us with this edition of Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of astronomers with the Molecules with ALMA at Planet-Forming Scales, or MAPS program, have identified what they call significantly large pools of organic molecules within planet-forming disks surrounding young stars. The molecules were found as the astronomers made detailed maps of the chemicals inside of the disks. The team refers to the molecules as precursors necessary for forming the basis of life. Karen Oberg from the Harvard and Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, who led the map-making project, says that some of the identified molecules are linked with the origins of life right here on Earth. ALMA is the Atacama Large Millimeter Array Radio Telescope located in Chile. A series of 20 papers outlining the team's findings will be published in the Astrophysical Journal Supplement. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
With less than 1 month to go until the 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference, world religious leaders are calling for strong action to protect the environment. The leaders gathered at a meeting hosted by the Vatican this week. Sabina Casofranco reports from Rome.
Religious leaders attending the one-day meeting Faith and Science towards COP26 Monday made a powerful appeal ahead of the UN Climate Change Conference, which opens October 31st in Glasgow, Scotland, and which Pope Francis is also planning to attend. For 2 weeks at this year's COP26 summit in Britain, participants will discuss the measures that are needed to avoid what some are calling an unprecedented ecological crisis. The appeal said, "We plead with the international community gathered at COP26 to take speedy, responsible, and shared action to safeguard, restore, and heal our wounded humanity and the home entrusted to our stewardship." It was handed to Alok Sharma, president of COP26 in Glasgow, and to the Italian Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio. Sharma spoke with reporters in Rome after the meeting.
We are at a very dangerous point. The window is closing on tackling climate change and keeping that 1.5 degree critical limit, temperature limit, within reach. But the door is still open. We still have time to act.
40 faith leaders from about 20 countries attended the Vatican gathering. They included the Grand Imam of Egypt's Al-Azhar Mosque, Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayeb, Patriarch Bartholomew I of Constantinople, the spiritual leader of Orthodox Christians, and the Church of England's Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, representatives of several other religions, including Hinduism, Judaism, Sikhism, Taoism, and Zoroastrianism, were also present. Missing from those invited to the conference was the Dalai Lama, the exiled spiritual leader of Tibet's Buddhists, who China does not recognize. The decision to not invite the Dalai Lama reflects the Pope's efforts to improve relations with China. Archbishop Paul Gallagher, Secretary of the Holy See's Relations with States, told the Reuters news agency that the Vatican's relations with Beijing now are difficult, but he noted that the Dalai Lama is well respected by the Pope. Sharma said the Pope and religious representatives who took part in the Vatican meeting cover about 75% of the world's population.
That is, by any measure, a significant percentage of people across the globe, and that's why their voice matters so much.
Pope Francis has made concern for Earth, which he has described as our common home, a hallmark of his papacy. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Terrorism experts say that suicide terrorism has become the most common of the violent attacks by pro-ISIS elements in the Philippines. Terror groups are now using children as suicide bombers. But that is just one of the ways that terror attacks have evolved in the Philippines and in the Southeast Asia since the 2017 Marawi siege and 20 years after the 9/11 attacks in the U.S. Reporter Sanli Buenafe Gachete has more from Manila, Philippines.
20 years ago, the September 11 attack in the United States of America paved the way in the war on terror against Islamist militants in the Philippines. When the U.S. Army soldiers were assigned in the southern part of the Philippines, particularly in Sulu and Basilan, they were tasked to defeat the extremely violent Abu Sayyaf group. But two decades after, where is the Philippines in the war against the Islamist groups? Would the Taliban's victory in Afghanistan affect the current situation in the Philippines? Are groups like Abu Sayyaf, the BIFF, and remnants of the Maute group get inspiration from the Taliban? Counter-terrorism experts from the Philippines, Ramel Banlawi and Yusuf Morales, explained how these small and radical Islamist forces in the southern Philippines are evolving and depicting the strength and victory of the Taliban.
Now we are monitoring how the Abu Sayyaf group will behave in the during the return of the Taliban in Afghanistan. And the latest picture that I got indicating that the fighters on the ground are becoming younger.
While the terrorist groups in the Philippines are usually unschooled and coming from rural areas, most of their members are now tech-savvy fighters. Members are usually from Generation Z, and they are more adapted to the situation by using social media as a tool to connect with other radical groups and build alliances in the Middle East, North Africa, and elsewhere, including in neighboring Indonesia and Malaysia.
The Abu Sayyaf group particularly has evolved from banditry to terrorism to crime terrorism nexus. So they have also experienced several waves of terror, and now we are experiencing a new wave of terror, especially in the context of the return of the Taliban.
Professor Yusuf Morales has seen suicide bombings carried out by foreigners, including women and children.
Radicalization happens because there are channels to radicalization that allows a person to connect and seek meaning. Poverty is not the only driving factor. Sometimes it is the quest for meaning. Sometimes it is ideological. Sometimes it is family. Sometimes it is social connections. And at other times, it is engagements.
According to the 2020 Global Terrorism Index, the Philippines is still among the 10 most dangerous countries in the world. Experts believe that the slow rehabilitation of the damaged Marawi city due to ISIS groups in 2017 could contribute to the radicalization of young Muslims in the south. Experts said the Philippines would brace for possible suicide attacks in the south in the next few months. For VOA News, I am Stanley Buenafigete in Manila, Philippines.
And that has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great day ahead.